we have a model of a coordinated entry system. So anyone who's looking to place into a shelter or seeking housing assistance or housing entry into the housing program, they call the housing hotline where they're screened and then assessed to see whether they would qualify for the program. So that gives us this rich data set that we're able to use to produce this one paper that I think everybody has in front of them. So the first group of numbers up there in purple are the totals. So that would be a number that includes anyone who called for a shelter or was placed into a program during 2018. And you can see in those numbers there that we identified that there were 3,106 households that were homeless last year. And under that in parentheses, you can see in 2017, that number was 2,593. So there was quite an increase. Then on the right, we have the numbers of families with children and veteran families, the breakout there.
This is total that called in or total served?
Both called and served. Okay. Yeah, they may have been, you know, there's some duplication there, but yeah, that's the largest universe.
Dale, is there a steady increase every year?
Well, we'd have to chart that out, but I'm not aware of, you know, of us having done that yet.
Okay. So, do you want questions as we go through, or at the end?
You can go ahead, sure.
So, it's interesting what you asked, like, and what Adam said earlier about needs. So when we have all that data, we don't have time to analyze it all the time. But is it possible you have data there that could show how many calls and how many, what sort of services were requested and the percentage that had their need met out of each of those types of service?
Yeah, and there's a little bit of that down below when we talked about the specific programs, but yeah, it's possible. I mean, we have data for all that, those kind of things, and so usually we can produce those kind of reports.
And we do analysis and have some discussions about it, and some of that is reflected in the Homeless Action Plan. You'll also see in the back, they will talk about, you know, like there's who was placed in what kind of, you know, shelter, who was placed in rapid rehousing, how many, what percentage of people that asked for that service received that service, and that helps us, like, figure out what the capacity gaps in our community are. But I'm getting ahead of you.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So the next section in green below is our diversion program. So the diversion is used if a client maybe just needs a quick, they may have income, they may have a job, and they just need a deposit or something like that, or 1 month of rent to get housed. Or it could be used on the prevention side to help them from falling into homelessness. All they need is that one emergency, you know, rent payment or something. So that's how diversion fits into this. And you can see that in 2018, 203 households were housed through the diversion program. And in 2017, that number was 93. So that's double. Wow. And that is, you know, a result of the increased funding and programs that were available in 2018 versus 2017. And then you can see 136 families with children. And of those, there were 237 children within those families. And 26 vets were housed through diversion and 35 seniors. And we'll talk about seniors a little more later on, because that's something we're looking at. So in a shelter in 2018, 2,485 households requested emergency shelter. And so, and then you look below that in parentheses, you can see that, you know, previously in 2017, that was 2,077, so it's an increase again. And then we talked about the number of families, children, and veteran households requested, but down below it in the small text, you can see this, the Council of Homeless placed 916 households into shelters. So that's where you can see the difference between the need and how many were actually.
Does that include the who?
Yes.
In those numbers? Okay.
It's a really low number.
40% is better than 10%.
Yeah, absolutely.
Does that include all of the warming centers?
No, that's not considered. That's just overnight shelter. So a day shelter wouldn't be included. So of those who are placed in shelter, there's a little bit of a breakdown there below. You can see those circles that kind of remind you like the planets.
Yeah, it's
kind of like that. But you can see the different demographic of the households. So there's singles and couples with a senior, families, and then with veterans. On the other side, at the top, is our housing programs. So in 2018, there were 2,398 households who requested housing. And then it's the number of families, number of beds, the number of seniors. And then in the text below, you can see that the Council of Homes placed 248 of those households into a housing program, so that's 10.3% of those who requested.
So according to this, in 2017, there were more people who requested housing?
That's what, yeah.
That's interesting, but yet the need went up.
The need went down.
The need went down, but the amount of people who were homeless went up.
So, we said 916 out of 2,077 in emergency shelters, and we served 248 out of 2,398, leaving 2,150 who have need. So, my question is, when they don't get their need met, do we track them or refer to alternate sources, or do we know?
So, do you want to answer that?
Go ahead.
Oh. Well, so we know, because everyone has an individual. So, first of all, it's not that there isn't any place else to refer them, because we do coordinated entry. So that's your point of entry to all the services in this community that are, you know, publicly founded around this. So, if they haven't been served, they have been served. Like, it's not that they were referred to some other place. And as we know from data, they're not moving to other communities. You know, so that's why you see the, you know, your total population that are homeless growing. That's where we have, like, a lack of capacity in the system. Everyone that has come in for assistance has an HMIS ID number. So if they go away, come back, you know that it's the same household that's coming back again, you know, because you've already collected that information.
Caveat to that, just because I work for the Housing Authority, those numbers don't necessarily reflect an HMIS.
Correct.
So if they are coming from the school district or the HMOs that are coming right off of our wait list, they're not reflected in that number.
That is.
In this number at all. So I anticipate there'll be some who get registered in that, in your numbers, who then get a Section 8 voucher, and your organization, but you never know about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's also numbers, some of the churches do some.
Right.
These two. It's like the Family Promise Keepers.
Family Promise.
Family Promise started.
Yeah, they are.
They are.
Yeah.
HMIS, Council for the Homeless database, has no links with the VHA low-income data. Linking data?
Not yet. Yeah, certainly not. We don't have, our databases aren't connected.
Right.
We have a lot of people to get the data for people to get personalized.
I assume they are on the HUD level.
Yeah.
Because it's still the same system, but
but some of the people that go in, like for example, Mary Butler, they are in HMIS. So
HMIS data? And do you know how they're collecting it?
How they're collecting it?
Paper?
Yeah, so, well, Tom could probably speak to this
better. Yeah. So, well, the council is very helpful. And in the beginning, when they do a coordinated assessment to get the initial information in the system, and then we receive the file and we meet with the client and we'll update it. Anytime that we meet with them, generally monthly or more, we'll get updated income information. We may we do it then. And then we make sure it's updated for a quarterly report. So it could be minimal to a lot, depending on the client, the changes with the client.
So how much staff time, so for every client that they meet, how much staff time are they spending collecting data? 5 minutes or an hour? I mean, for every hour that they spend.
Say an hour would be too much and 5 minutes would be too little.
Okay.
So maybe per client per month, 15 minutes at the most.
So like Tom mentioned, like the Housing Solutions Center staff, when they do the screening, mm-hmm. they're filling out the client's demographic information mm-hmm. and their income and their disabilities and all that. And so when they get placed into a program, once they go over there, that information is already there. They just need to update if there's been a change.
But that initial intake, how long does it take staff to do that? Because Tom's on his end of it, he's not taking that long. But a lot of that information has already been entered, right?
If it's already been entered. There's certain programs, like HEN, they don't go through the coordinated system. So
okay.
That's an exception to the rule.
But, okay. But for the vast majority that do, that front end, those front end folks, how much time are they spending collecting that demographic information?
So when we do it for HEN, it takes probably another. So we do, first of all, we collect the data from this questionnaire and has its common intake form. It asks all the questions that are in the service form. That can, depending on the client itself, can take anywhere from 15 minutes to a half hour.
And that's a paper form that you're giving.
Paper form, and then we put it in the system, which takes another 15, 20 minutes.
Okay, so half the time is spent collecting it from the client, and half the time is spent entering the data.
It depends on the client.
Okay.
On whether or not they can pull the information.
And one thing just to bear in mind, for example, with coordinated entry, you're not just collecting data for eligibility purposes. You're doing an assessment, and the assessment is the service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you know that interaction, that relationship, that you know, often in case management, you're getting the information you need in those interactions in providing the service, and you can enter that into data. You know, you can enter data information in HMIS.
But I am curious too: is that done conversation style, or is that done with a form that person has to fill out?
That will vary from the program.
Yeah, very.
You know, and there are programs.
But through coordinated entry, that's the central.
Well, the assessment. That's.
Are they handed a form, or is it done conversation style?
My understanding is that it's done conversation style, and the person doing the assessment is the one with a form.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they fill it out.
The council does it a little bit different. They do, I think they fill it out. They're on the phone with them sometimes, they'll fill it out as they're talking to them. Conversation form.
Okay.
It's like an interview, and then they'll just fill it out right there.
Yeah. Okay.
So the initial screening, somebody calls, like, to get this a shelter, that'll be over the phone. They'll do their demographics and stuff like that. If we think they may qualify for a program, we're going to do an assessment. They're going to come in and have a one-on-one mm-hmm. interview mm-hmm. where their mm-hmm. the assessment staff is filling out.
Okay. And that's the part that's done conversation style, and the staff is filling out the paperwork. Okay.
So I noticed something different about this year's numbers, and I want to say thank you. I'm correct, and there's a way these are being presented differently this year. That's not just me, right?
No, yeah, there's a whole, yeah. It used to just be one side.
And it used to be, you know, we would only talk about the numbers of sheltered and unsheltered, and we would always usually talk about that under the 1,000 number and 800 and 600. I mean, that's typically where we always demonstrated our numbers. And I'm noticing, I noticed right off the bat that this year's numbers are really reflecting. So is that because you're collecting data a little differently and you're looking at different numbers now, or...
We're trying to share more. to get a little deeper and show more information.
Awesome. So I'm very appreciative of this, knowing that we're really talking about how many people are calling in, how many people are reporting homelessness. This really gives us a broader, bigger picture view, because I've been saying it's more than this. People just don't get it. It's more than this. And this really speaks to that. Getting 3,000 numbers of people calling for help really is a reflection of what's going on in our community. So I just wanted to acknowledge that and appreciate that. And
ditto.
To go forward with that.
Thank you, Neil.
I have a quick question. For the housing numbers, I'm trying to relate it to diversion. Are they also, so they're calling in, they need housing assistance, so they're tallied into the 2,398 households that are needing housing assistance. Are they also, I'm assuming, sorry, and so correct me if I'm wrong, and then if they receive diversion, are they also considered one of those that are received housing? Or is it completely pulled out separate?
I actually know the answer.
Yeah, I'm saying that they don't count it.
No, so in this form, the diversion is not reflected. They're not part of that 10.3%. But according to Laura, if we included diversion, receiving some kind of housing assistance, those sort of would be up to around 20%. That's what she said.
So are they still tallied in the 2,398 of households asking for housing assistance?
Oh, my understanding is yes, but you...
And when I may have phrased, when I say asking for housing assistance, it's people who were qualified, they had that assessment, and they were assessed if they were qualified for a housing program.
But they're still offered the diversion option.
Right. Yes.
So they are counted in the number of people asking for help, but not in the number that received housing assistance. So that does make
form.
It the number of the tiny bit.
Our number of students in Battleground is down by 10%. Our homeless, our total. We have 32 fewer homeless families this year than we did last year.
Two questions.
So I don't jive.
The veterans numbers that are throughout here, does it make any difference? Is it all local and state funding as opposed to veterans, federal funding? I'm not certain. There always seem to be a lot of veterans programs, and yet we still have a lot of veterans who are homeless and have needs, and I wondered if this in any way reflects any federal funding for like housing.
This reflects a need, not what assistance
need.
You're getting.
Right.
Yeah.
Assistance is there for vets, but navigating the system is the
Yeah, I get that, and that's why yeah. when I see the veterans...
For vets in particular.
So, the other thing that interests me...
I'm going to skip to that.
We have a program a named veterans program, is that right, Neil?
Veterans by name list.
Right, veterans by name list. And I think at one point you said... We do an assessment by random follow-up calls to services.
Sam did that, yeah.
Have we ever tried?
But not, that wasn't a Veterans by Name list. That was the Veterans Assistance Center that she was following up with.
Have we ever done that sort of follow-up with families?
We as staff in the county?
No.
The programs...
Council for the Homeless, for example.
I'm not sure I exactly understand the question. We have wait lists of people that are waiting to get into our program, and there have been times when we've needed to clean up that to make sure that those people
right.
still need assistance. And so they've called them on their contact number to find out many times they've already may have found a solution to that problem and don't need to be on the wait list anymore. Maybe they moved out of the area or something. But I wouldn't say that it's regularly done, but like once a year or so, or maybe say every 6 months, they're going through that list and trying to clean up the people that shouldn't be on the wait list anymore.
So that's a wait list where they've met eligibility, but
mm-hmm.
there are no resources.
Right.
And we do keep a wait list.
We talked about it as the priority pool.
Yeah, priority. Wait list.
So if we're ready to move on. So We have some additional demographics about the age, gender, race, and ethnicity for the people that were identified. So that's referring back to that original total from the very first section we looked at. So those are the demographics for those people. And then we've added down at the bottom there a little bit of a racial disparity analysis, looking at what the census estimates are for racial demographics in Clark County, and then the number as they're represented in our HMIS system. And so in some places you can see that, like, for Black or African American, that's according to our census data, that's 2% of our population, but they make up 13% of the population in our HMIS. So this is just a little taste of that. We're going to be doing more deeper dives into these kind of racial disparity analysis throughout the year.
Dan, do you know when the point in time count will be available?
It should be up sometime this month. I'm not sure exactly.
Are you going to tell us, give us hints on the trend?
So the council, so like they did with this snapshot, yeah, they're putting together a more comprehensive marketing information of the point in time count rather than just that basic spreadsheet that they had provided in the past. So they've asked and we'll do a release of all of that information at one time. And then if Dale's available, we'd love to have him back in July so we can actually have a conversation like we normally would in May about the point in time count data and what that is happening. You know, typically we've had it in May because that's when we would get the information. So moving forward in our work plan, you'll see that in July, moving forward, so that once the information comes out, we'll have Dale and he'll be able to come.
Well, and since it is just a point in time and it's useful as a benchmark rather than a, this is really much more useful than the point in time. Yeah.
Great work, Dale.
So
I'd like to suggest, just to get us back on track, there isn't a whole lot to report on the federal side when it comes to legislation. There is a lot to report on the state side with what closed, but I can just email you guys a summary of the state stuff tomorrow, so you can have just a summary of what was accomplished.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Instead of reading it out.
You know. So I have one more question for Dale.
Sure.
Do we ever try? You have all the data. There's more data than we can possibly use. Do we ever try tracking some families through the process where we know when they came in, what they were referred to, whether they got there, whether they were successful, and whether they re-entered? Do we do that sort of analysis? Is there a way to group it?
Well, we definitely do. I mean, we have the ability to do that. It gets a little, I mean, you kind of need to know which families you want to track. There are, I know that, so we submit all of our data to Howard, and they were recently showing off a tool that they have that you could use with your data to produce a system map where it'll show the flow of people through how they travel through the system. So once that's released, we'll take a look at that and see if our gut check, if it seems like it's working the way it should be, and then we may release that as well. I also wanted to mention that we are working on a data dashboard through our website that will come online at some point this year, definitely I think by the fall, and it'll be public. So you'll be able to go and see by intervention type, so by rapid rehousing or transitional housing or whatever, the different system performance measures that we're meeting, including like returns, system returns, so the people who exited to permanent housing, how many of those returned to homelessness, things like that, what the percentages are for the people that are exiting to permanent housing, and things like that. So you'll be able to see all that through our dashboard. So we're, like I said, we're trying to share more. So we'll be able to have a lot more rich conversations in the future.
And once that's available, we will make sure that it gets out to the board, how to access that information.
We have a process we need to go through first, make sure that it's all vetted. We have a meeting this week with the programs to let them see their data so they can confirm that yes, that seems right to them, before we just start pushing it.
Well, I know the mental health system tried to do a path analysis between resources with those. It looked like a spider's web in the end. That was 10 years ago or something. So I've always thought, for these resources, it's really interesting to see where people go, where they need success in getting these people. Okay. Thank you, Michael. We can skip you on the agenda.
Yeah, good report.
Thank you for the information. And we'll have you back. We can get more questions. Thank you very much. I'm looking for my agenda.
City,
yeah,
City Manager Murphy.
Sorry?
Yeah.
Yes.
So
I lost
you guys. I wanted to just give you a quick update on the Affordable Housing Fund. So the city's in the third year of collection, and we have funded projects for the total of the 3 years. And we haven't collected all the money because we tend to award money before we get it because we realize projects take a while to come to fruition. We've awarded funding for 22 projects. And all but three of them are in some sort of design phase in the city because they have to go through land use. The result, if they all come to fruition, the result will be over 700 units of housing, with 450 of those limited to people that are 50% median.
Wow.
And we also have a dashboard. Not sure it's as creative as the one you guys are working on, but you can go there and look at it, and it'll tell you the stats. One of the pieces of information that the council has really been interested in is the amount of leverage. So just in the funding for 2019, we awarded $8 million and it leveraged $119 million.
Nice.
And that's the initial estimate. That's not, usually some of these projects are 2 years out, so they take a little bit longer.
Is that for the full, so you mentioned over 700 units for these 22 projects, but only 450 of them, not only, 450 is a lot. Is that for the entire project, so even the market rate units leveraged funds, or is there a way to break it down what actually was leveraged towards low income households?
So some of the projects have market rate, and that's the total construction cost.
For
the then we also have another part of the funding that is used for rental assistance and services. So we awarded $1.2 million just recently, and it's the second round. So we've also spent over $500,000 on rental assistance in the last 2 years.
Nice.
And then we've also awarded funding for shelter upgrades, resulting in an increase of only about 6 beds, but it's still we haven't increased shelter beds in a long time. So any little bit is helpful.
And your position is shifting, or they'll bring you something?
No, we're having someone come in that's going to just focus on homelessness, and I'll just focus on housing. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Yes.
When does that close? When you have somebody
hired? It's open until we find someone. So it's not closed yet. It's still fly.
I'm good.
Thank you for that update.
Yes, my pleasure.
Over to you, Rebecca.
So some of you may know that May is Community Action Month, so we celebrate community action and all the work that we've done. It's the 56th year of community action. A news release is supposed to have been, the news release already went out last week, I believe. Could be wrong. Tonight is a proclamation. County Council will declare Community Action, or May is Community Action Month. The executive team is planning on being there for the proclamation. Any other board members that would like to be there are more than welcome. And then the National Community Action Partnership put together this really awesome toolkit for Community Action Month, and it goes through like all kinds of things to put out, and it made it really easy for us to do a lot of these things. So I worked with Johnny over in our communications department, and so if you haven't seen, they've been tweeting out every few days different community action things, and so I've been watching for them and sharing them, and so if you see them, please share them. There's some good and bad and information about poverty in our community, and stuff, but it's really about getting the information out there about community action and what we do in Clark County and nationwide.
Who's who's tweeting? I mean, what would be the...
Clark County.
Clark County Community Services.
No, just Clark County.
Just Clark County. Because I've seen some community services stuff.
I guess we do not have it to our own Twitter account.
My department Twitter.
So I've been seeing it on Facebook. I don't do Twitter, but Facebook I have been redoing those posts. Tonight, for the executive team to get the proclamation, I'll take a quick picture of you, and that will go out tomorrow, hopefully.
What time do we need to be there?
It's usually right at 6 o'clock is when they do the proclamations. And as part of that toolkit, it was really, they put together this calendar, which gave us, like, ideas of what to do, like, every day. We weren't able to do something every day, but we definitely have things going on every few days.
Nice.
Impact statements and things like that. So really stepped up our game this year as far as making sure we were getting information out about community action, the proclamation, the news release, and now we're putting stuff out on social media.
Cool.
So maybe next year, if I get on my game a little bit faster, we can do even more next year.
Can you
year.
Email this to all of us?
I can send you the link to the entire toolkit.
Okay, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that would be good.
So the toolkit, but is that going to have our
it is,
calendar?
Yes, it's in there. It's one of the pages.
Okay, cool. Because this we could totally get out the door. That we're not going to get out the door.
No.
This we could get out the door.
Yeah, it's one of the pages in here, and I think they actually have it on their website, like a link specifically to...
So is this for us? This isn't for Clark County, though.
This is national.
This is just their sample. Okay.
Yes, this is for the 1,000-plus community action agencies to use to really promote community action.
It'd be cool to have a calendar like that for Clark County.
Well, I'll be happy to see it when you put it together.
In my spare time, I will do that.
But I did. I met with Johnny. She was really excited to see this. She said it's the best toolkit that she's seen.
They do some great
put
stuff
together, so it's, yes.
They have an advocacy action one that's really, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're really excited. I mean, we were able to do something for every single day, but to get things out every few days and stuff. So keep an eye out for it. If you're not linked to Clark County's Facebook or Twitter accounts, like them now, and then you can see what the net if they share amongst your connections.
Oh, open time. Is anybody got topics they'd like to raise? Comments they'd like to make?
Dale's still here.
Dale?
I brought more numbers.
Oh, good.
We like numbers. I love them.
Give me numbers.
Did you just say more numbers?
Just a couple.
Yeah, no. Bridget loves numbers.
So I mentioned that I was going to talk more about seniors.
Oh,
so this
right.
is a year-to-year chart showing how the number of seniors, and this is 62-plus, have increased from 2015 to 2018.
The number of homeless seniors?
So Michael and I were at the Region 10 Community Action Conference in Spokane a couple of weeks ago. And the National Community Action Partnership had talked to us. You know, we've heard about this, the silver tsunami. Some of the data that they're finding, and they actually have a report that's just been released, and I want to get that out to you guys also, a connection to that report, is showing that the median senior household, and I think that one is 65 plus, but I'm not exactly sure, the savings that they have in their own pensions or, you know, savings is $88,000. So that's the middle of the road. When we looked, when they looked at the, what's the median? And there's the
mean,
which is the average, thank you. Zero.
See what?
Zero savings. That's what the average amount of savings is. It's so low, it's zero.
That doesn't surprise.
To pay for people, you know, to be on retirement. So that was one of the big takeaways that I took. So we will start looking at ways that we can really work with the Area Agency on Aging and things like that. So what can we do to help prepare? Because we are going to see a lot more seniors accessing services over the next 7 years.
It's pretty active. I forget whether it's a task force or whatever, the county council's group that's looking at aging.
Commission on Aging.
Yes. They seem to be very active. I wonder how they're getting all these numbers. They are. That's scary. There was a Facebook post of this 92-year-old getting evicted out of her assisted living facility because she could no longer afford the £7 per month that it costs to live in one of those places. Wow. And she's in a wheelchair.
Yeah, so our call center, this aligns with what they've been reporting. They were saying they feel like they've been getting a lot more calls from seniors, and so we just wanted to put together a little bit of numbers to see if we can confirm that.
So what kind of percentage increase is that? I mean, like 35, 40, 40%?
Well, back to 2015,
Yeah, that's
kind of
like by three.
You know, I'm assuming, and I'm guessing I'm pretty accurate on this, that this is economics, not any other reason for cause of homelessness. I don't know.
Could they be sure number of people aging into this population?
Without having the savings?
We're talking increase in rents with limited income on Social Security. You know, we're not talking, you know, this isn't family issues, this isn't every, you know,
right.
Job loss, this is more of economics that are leading to this increase, I would guess. Is that, are we tracking reasons at all, or?
Rent increases would be a significant part of that.
Yeah.
It's interesting because our funding over the last probably 10 years or so has increasingly focused on target populations, those with the biggest barriers to housing.
Mm-hmm.
Mental health or
families.
Whatever. We have not been really funding housing so much for the average low-income family that's lost their house. You know, and when you're scarce resources, I guess they are low. But this sort of thing really shows us that targeting to, I don't know what it shows us, but it's scary.
So this could be some of our most vulnerable people eventually, correct? Yeah.
Yeah.
They should. So in a priority pool, they would be up in the top.
Yeah, they're going to score higher in the vulnerability assessment.
And we're only sheltering 40% of people who are identifying they need shelter and only rehousing 10% of people. I mean, so
right.
Yes, and they're more likely, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that this, as a community, we have the capacity, yeah.
92-year-old in a wheelchair, that's a picture that I'll stick in your mind.
Yeah.
I just wonder if there's been a flux of coming through to the housing.
And I think it is, that, you know, there's economics and changing demographics.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think that was predicted even 5 years ago,
yeah.
10 years ago, is that maybe boomers could reach this, that this population, you're going to see this growth in numbers across all sectors of not just homelessness.
Well, especially if they get some Social Security, because that's a lot. When you've got no other income, that's what people expected to be able to live on, which you couldn't. But you cut that, and you double the population right there.
I have autism. I have to
look, it's 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Did you have anything else for us, Dale? Any other good news? Can you leave us on a high note?
You got more numbers?
I did. Also, I don't. This has gone around a couple times, but maybe everybody's seen the zip code report that we do.
Ooh.
So it's good to
see.
Anybody hasn't seen it. Nope.
Yeah.
Let me see.
It's a good one. You just start passing them around.
You're not coming from other zip codes.
Depends on what meetings.
Right. Oh, I like the map on
that. I might hand this out at our neighbors.
So we're serving people in our.
I wanted to be at the meeting, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it.
Best.
Well, I'm in the same boat. I've got to go to this meeting, the actual one. Then I have to pick up coffee at Burgerville on the way, and I'm going, 6:30?
It's going to be tight.
So this report
has
for people that call our shelter or call for screening or whatever, one of the universal data questions that we ask is their last permanent zip code. So this is intended to be what their zip code was before they became homeless, so that we can see, you know, where the homeless populations are coming from. So that's why you see on the far right a chart of states that are even outside of, you know, Washington, because it may be coming from other states.
Thank you.
Originally.
Thank you for purposeful. This is great.
Not all coming from California, not all coming from Portland.
No, they come from the Midwest because the weather's so cold. You gotta get to the coast.
Thank you so much, Dale, for
providing
information. You did a great job
answering your questions.
Yeah. And being patient.
Yeah. One of the downsides of being Kansas, I've got a grasshopper brain. It goes. So I'm sorry if I.
I have a question.
Yes.
I have received an email from, and I don't know how to pronounce her name, Sharon, P-E-S-U-T.
Sharon Pesek.
How she pronounce her name?
Pesek.
Pesek. Pesek. Okay, just like it's spelled. There is a, looks like a forum or a seminar on May 30th.
Yes.
Regarding poverty.
It's on my calendar to be there. I don't know much about it yet. She just emailed me to see if I could be there. And then there's supposed to be more information to come.
Okay.
About it. Have you got?
I was going to ask you if you knew anything about it.
It's about poverty. That's what I know so far. Yeah. So as soon as I get more information,
I'm planning. I'm planning to be there, but it's a 4-hour program.
It is. With community leaders and.
Yeah.
And
so I thought I would. I would be there.
When I have more information, I can share it with the board. I didn't want to give you anything that I don't have any answers about it yet.
Okay.
Can I just add briefly before we take off? Seriously, thank you to staff because you guys have seriously been hustling to get all of this done. Plus, we have a full board, plus the RFA. Thank you, thank you, thank you for making it happen.
Super excited. Full board. Thank you. Doing the RFA is always a whole lot of extra time.
Oh, yeah.
We ask of you guys to review all of those applications. The access for the read-only is still there. Your logins are still good to use.
Good.
So if you want to go in and re-look at the ones that have been funded, we'll get notification out. Official, it'll take us a couple of days to get it out, get the word out, but it'll be out there.
Sorry. Okay. Another question for you. The slides that were shown earlier on the funding, can you email those to me?
So that's what's going to go out.
Okay.
I may be slightly modified, and we'll say that it was recommended by the CAB. And then we have to take that to the board, to the county council, for official adoption.
Oh, okay. So it's really too early.
Actual contracts.
Okay. Too early then to really discuss it in a public forum.
So once I get that email out, then you guys can talk.
And this is a public forum.
Yes.
Yeah. So like this is already like this meeting is a public meeting. So so in a sense we've just discussed it for the first time publicly.
We have yet to have a council not move. The recommendation is going forward. That doesn't mean it couldn't happen, but it's
What is the schedule to the council?
I don't even have a schedule because I have to do a staff report.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad you explained that because what I like to do is. Our city council meetings are the following day after the CAB meetings, and I try to come up with a summary.
Yeah.
That sounds like it might be a little premature then to get into the funding issue.
As long as I will send it out to you. I will send it to the applicants and copy you guys or just get it out to you also somehow. I don't know how we'll get, but we will get it out so that you guys have it, and then you're more than happy. I mean, you can share the information. It's in a public forum. That's part of the reason we invite them here so they can be here. I'd like to get it to the applicants first before everybody else starts talking. Oh, I'm so sorry you didn't get funded.
Oh,
what?
That makes sense.
I am going to work diligently to get it out as fast as I can.
Cool.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.